talk about the movie, to talk about the movie, a sequel commentary. We're gonna talk about the movie, to talk about the movie, a sequel commentary. Cue up the film in question, but don't start it yet. If you're not paused on four zeros, it's something you'll regret. Soon the singing will be stopping and we're gonna get to talking on a basis that is voluntary. About the movie, a sequel commentary. We're gonna talk about the movie, to talk about the movie, a sequel commentary.
Yep. You're listening to Sequel Commentary. We do an audio commentary on films that usually are sequels. This time around, we're looking at All Dogs Go to Heaven, directed by Don Bluth. With me is Thrasher.
Hey, hello, everybody.
And,
or should I say, heaven-o, everybody.
Oh, there you go.
I'm in the spirit of things.
The two lead dogs in this film were voiced by Burt Reynolds and Dom DeLuise, who, of course, worked together in Smokey and the Bandit 2, and they were friends in real life, and they co-starred in many movies throughout their career.
They've got really good chemistry in this movie, and the way they interact, all their dialogue had to have been recorded together in the same recording studio at the same time.
Okay. Are you recording, Thrasher?
Yes, I am.
Great. Just making sure.
Are you not recording? Should we start over?
No, I am recording. This is great for a commentary. After Don Bluth made this film, he was fresh off a couple of big hits. He did An American Tale. He did Land Before Time.
Huge successes.
And this one was a middling success in the theater, but on home video, All Dogs Go to Heaven was a huge smash. But Don Bluth had nothing to do with any of the sequels to Land Before Time, American Tale, or All Dogs Go to Heaven. He did later...
Back in my college days, I was fortunate enough to attend a lecture conducted by Don Bluth, and he, very early on in the lecture, stated that he had nothing to do with any of the sequels to his films, and said that he was ashamed of them, and whatever we in the audience might think of those sequels, he assures us that he feels worse about them.
Well, you
even
know,
he had nothing to do with them.
He directed a sequel himself. He did Anastasia, and he directed the sequel Bartok the Magnificent.
Oh, that's true. Because that was later.
That was later. That was the one exception.
I gotta say, you don't see many kids' movies that begin with dogs being shot at.
Yeah, so these dogs made their escape from the pound.
This is a maximum security pound, though.
It's also worth noting, so Dom DeLuise is the voice of the dog with the hat, and Burt Reynolds is the main one. And it's worth mentioning that Dom DeLuise was in almost every, like, Don Bluth theatrical animated film.
He was
the crow in Secret of Nim. He was the fat cat in American Tale. He did a lot of different stuff.
Another actor that worked heavily with Don Bluth, Charles Nelson Reilly, who we will also see later in this film.
He's also in A Troll in Central Park. Also directed by Don Bluth. So 1939, Louisiana Bayou. And
it's a neat choice of setting. You don't get too many period pieces. Like, most kids' films either take place like in a sort of idealized version of the modern world or in a kind of fairy tale land that doesn't really exist in any point in time.
Although Disney, several years later, released The Frog Princess, which took place in New Orleans as well.
Well, we know who they ripped off.
I don't know if you'd say a ripoff, but yeah, I mean, New Orleans is a real rich setting. And Don Bluth, I always think of him, and I always feel kind of bad for him, although he did have some big successes. And, you know, he used to be a Disney animator, then went off and formed his own studio, and he's also responsible for video games like Space Ace and Dragon's Lair.
Mm-hmm.
And he's not quite as edgy as, like, a Ralph Bakshi, you know, with what he's trying to do, but it's still darker than Disney.
Oh, no, he has a lot of edge, but I think Don Bluth really wants to... He wants to tell stories for a family. He's not aiming for a kid audience. He was always trying to do what Pixar does now. I think is kind of been his mold.
I don't think Pixar is consistently successful though, like some people think. But
They do very well, and they make a lot of good art.
Cars 2 was so artistic.
I enjoyed that movie. It did not need to be made, and you don't need to see it, but I did enjoy it because I like old cheesy spy films, and there's plenty of references to old cheesy spy films.
So with this film and this casino that we're watching right now, isn't it co-owned by what's the Burt Reynolds dog called
Charlie.
In this one?
Yeah, it was...
Charlie? Is that his name?
Yeah, Charlie. Charlie Barker, actually, I believe. He does say his full name. I believe it comes out as Charlie Barker. That's later in the film. But yeah, Charlie was business partners with this other dog we're going to see later.
Carface.
Carface, yeah, the gangster dog. And yeah, this was their establishment. 50-50, they both got it running. We'll learn about this. We'll learn about this exactly why Charlie was in the pound later, though. Although I got to ask, when was the last time you saw this movie, Matt?
I saw this movie for the very first time prepping for this episode, watching it last night.
Really?
Yeah, right after we recorded the sequel cast on Mallrats. I had never seen it as a kid. I was aware of it. And I had rented other Don Bluth films, like Secret of NIMH, I grew up with, and Rock-a-Doodle-Doo or whatever.
Rock-a-Doodle, yeah.
Yeah, Rock-a-Doodle. I saw that one, too.
Yeah, I saw this in the theaters when it came out.
Okay.
I'm sure I saw it on home video, but the last, like, before prepping for the sequel cast, I saw it in college. I had two friends. Twins! Who they were both huge fans of this movie. We stayed up late one night watching it. And then I actually just watched it about 15 minutes ago with my girlfriend, who absolutely loves this film. I had asked her if she wanted to be on this audio commentary, and she said no, because she'd probably just do nothing but squee the whole time.
Well, that's fine. We could use some squee sometimes. As was the tradition of audio, not audio commentaries, of animated films at the time, you have sung and dance numbers, and they're actually sung by the actors, you know, in this case, Burt Reynolds and Dom DeLuise. And Burt Reynolds doesn't have a great voice, but did he have, like, a novelty record or something in the 70s?
I'm sure
he surprised me.
I'm sure he did. If it wasn't him, it was Tom Selleck. But I love this musical number. It reminds me of the Bob Hope and Bing Crosby Road movies. Ah, a little racism there for you.
Yeah.
It's motivated by what's going on in the movie. I like that we get to see a lot of Charlie and Itchy's friendship. Mm-hmm. I also like that it feels like something they're kind of making up as they go along, and that, I think that's partly because Burt Reynolds doesn't have the best singing voice.
Well, right, it's kind of like what they did with what's his name from My Fair Lady? Rex Harrison.
Yes.
You know, where it's a lot of these sort of talking songs where you're not singing, but it's sort of like pitter-patter, Gilbert and Sullivan styles things.
Mm, yeah. Oh, and there is Killer, played by Charles Nelson Reilly.
Yep.
Looks a little bit like Charles Nelson Reilly.
I think so. I love Burt Reynolds' laugh, the ha-ha.
Oh, yeah.
It makes you wonder, for the sequels, you know, Burt Reynolds didn't play the part. In All Dogs Go to Heaven 2, it was played by Charlie Sheen, and then... I'm not sure who did it in the TV show, but in the made-for-TV movie about the All Dogs Go to Heaven Christmas, Steven Weber did the voice. But you think, wouldn't Norm MacDonald be able to do a pretty mean Burt Reynolds impersonation?
Well, Norm MacDonald did a really killer Burt Reynolds impersonation on Saturday Night Live, but the thing is, that is an impersonation. An impersonation of Burt Reynolds wouldn't be right for the character. Only Burt Reynolds or a similar kind of seen it all actor is appropriate.
Yeah.
Now that little spiral wipe there, they get a lot of mileage out of that spiral wipe. Oh, you know what I love though? I didn't get to comment on this earlier, but the beer is animated with such care and gusto. I just like as a kid watching this movie, like, oh wow, that's some good looking beer.
When you talk about being a bit darker, these characters smoke, these characters drink, and later on they gamble. You get to see a depiction of hell. That's a kind of frightening. Yeah, and characters get trying to kill each other and murders and things. So, the name Carface has to be a takeoff of Scarface, right?
Oh, yeah. That, and I always, like, the only thing missing from his character is, like, I feel like he should have, like, a tire streak on his face. Like, that's how he got his name. He's the dog that chased a car and then caught it. But yeah. Instead, he just has an obsession with cars, which just carries through the film, which is a nice sort of subtle little touch. There's all sorts of little bits of dog behavior and, you know, dog lore referenced in this movie. And right here, you see the difference between Charlie and Carface's personality. You know, Charlie's about the music, he's about the good times, and Carface is just about business in the most brutal sense.
Right, if Charlie is Bacchus, god of wine, Carface is Hades, lord of the underworld.
No, I would say...
No?
I really don't know. Maybe, you know, I really don't know what god he'd be. If you're going with ancient Greece, do they have perhaps double-headed Janus? Master of beginnings and endings. Because he certainly ends Charlie near the beginning of this film.
But it's nice, the music out of the jukebox is jazz. Adding to the New Orleans flavor.
Oh, yeah.
I guess it's not a jukebox, it's just a stereo system.
No, it's an old... It's not even stereo, it's an old vacuum.
There's a radio?
Tube radio.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so it's been revealed here, but that the whole reason Charlie was in the pound, he was set up by Carface to get picked up at the dog catcher and sent to the pound, where he was going to be put to sleep, or, you know, as they put it, he was on death row. And I like that. I like that it's just the pound is just literally a prison analog for dogs.
Yep.
I mean, I like that this is a movie about criminal types.
It is. It gives it a unique flavor. It even though this movie has, you know, nothing but dogs in it for the most part, it differentiates itself from Lady and the Tramp with the New Orleans setting and the theme. And then the depiction of heaven later on is also very interesting. And that it's not necessarily, you know, it doesn't have heavy, heavy religious imagery.
Well, I think we'll get to that when heaven appears. But that right there, I love the Charlie and Carface's place. There's all sorts of interesting sets in this movie. In that case, you know, being like a boat repurposed as a dog casino. And here we have Mardi Gras. And if you freeze frame these sequins, you can see all sorts of neat costumes and details in the background. I love the legs and the fishnet stockings.
Is there anyone flashing their tits for beads?
It's implied. I mean, there were some beads on the ground.
Oh, okay.
Oh, I love this. I love this dragon scorpion float.
They're taking him out in the town, getting him sauced.
Now, where do dogs get watercress sandwiches with the crust cut off? Watch is clearly tarnished silver.
Yep.
But he's drunk.
Much like Burt Reynolds was at the beginning of Smokey and the Bandit 2.
That's like Dom DeLuise probably was, too.
Yeah.
I also like that Killer is kind of like the Dexter of this dog population. He's the dog that's into torture and murder and mayhem.
Right, and that he's kind of, you know, goofy and nebbish makes him a nice contrast to Carface, who is a very typical sort of old man gangster kind of character.
He's almost a Lawrence Tierney type, Carface, yeah, is.
I'd say so.
See, what we ought to do is we ought to take some scenes from this movie and then just sync it up with Reservoir Dogs.
Oh, jeez.
You're not going to be Mr. Pink. You're going to be Mr. No one's going to be Mr. Black. It'll be Mr. Pink. Because I say you're Mr. Pink.
Why do I have to be Mr. Brown?
And in Carface, true to his M.O., going to kill a man with a car. No, I also like that
car.
They're safety conscious and they turn the lights on. Because you wouldn't want someone to get hit, you know, other than the victim.
Right. I mean, this is really kind of horrific, and also that he dies from being hit by a car makes sense, in that if you have a pet dog or know someone that the dog that has died, especially a younger dog, it's usually from getting hit by a car, if not
old
age.
You don't want
him
to go near that road.
Right. And now he's going to heaven, going through Bubble Land, through the clouds.
It's a vortex. You got to go through a vortex to get to any
heavenly
other
heavenly vortex.
And I guess did he hit stars and that's what those are, or did he explode through the firmament and that's what the firmament's made out of, those crystals?
So there's a theory you were pointing out yesterday, Thrasher, in that all dogs go to heaven because they're naturally loyal and kind.
Well, yeah, she makes a thing about how all dogs go to heaven because they're naturally good and loyal. And I actually did some thinking about that while watching this, because there's some interesting theological complications. Oh, and the lion shall lay down with the lamb. But thinking it over, I think I figured it out. Since dogs didn't eat of the forbidden fruit, they are not tainted by original sin, which is why all dogs, including gambling, murdering dogs, get into heaven by default. They don't have the knowledge of good and evil. I've stunned you, haven't I?
You have. I'm stunned by the awkwardness of this song.
Well, it's another one of those talk singing songs. I mean, she is actually singing and trying to give Charlie the soft sell on heaven,
and he's
just
not
being Charlie. Oh, little cartoon duck, woodland creatures. Now, here's the thing. I'm guessing. Now, do you think she's an angel dog, or is she just a dead dog that is the welcoming committee for heaven?
I think she's a dead dog that's the welcoming committee for heaven.
Now, I am disturbed that we've seen lions, lambs, and furry little woodland creatures, haven't seen any people.
I think dog heaven is separate from regular heaven.
But there's woodland animals.
Think. Well, there's animal heaven and people heaven, I think.
So here you're
establishing some world building in the film.
And I liked it that the watch is on a string. It's not like levitating by magic. You can see the string.
But also that these watches all have a knob you can turn to make it go backwards, even though you're not ever supposed to do that. That seems a big flaw in the system.
Well, yeah. The Mickey Mouse watch. But, well, you know, I guess, you know, if you go, because there's a sundial, I guess like the further back in time you go, the more old-fashioned the timekeeping devices are. You know, you go back far enough, sundials, go back far enough, water clocks, go back far enough, sand dials, until eventually there's just like, I don't know, like a rock with a picture of the moon on it you use to try to keep track of lunar cycles. Now, this is one thing that is interesting, because the heaven, as portrayed in this movie, isn't that appealing, because they make it absolutely clear that you just, by being in heaven, you just sort of know everything, what has happened, what's going to happen. But that's a big problem. Why would you want to be in that kind of environment? You know, surprise is important. Or if you just open, but then again, maybe if you open yourself to that kind of omniscience, maybe you just kind of get used to it and it doesn't matter.
I think this is one of the better songs in the movie. I don't think as a whole they work very well, but this melody is okay. It does.
Has some story in it, some character.
And he's being, you know, his old scoundrel self, Charlie B. Barker, or Barkin, or whatever.
Charlie B. Barkin, yeah.
Yeah. He's just trying to distract her so he can wind it backwards and get back on Earth.
Yeah, well, you gotta wonder if you think that's the first time that's ever happened.
I like this lyric. Down there, there's a world of used cars and singles bars, broken dreams and out-of-reach stars.
I also like that one thing where they're dancing on the clouds. Like, you've got some natural rhythm. That's pretty rare for a whippet. That's a nice little line.
Yeah. And, I mean, again, you can see in this sequence, Don Bluth never has the budget or the staff that, like, a Disney animated film would have. But there's still a lot of character to his animation, even if it's not as showy.
I'd say there's more character to his animation than in most Disney films.
Well, this came out in theaters the same year Disney's Little Mermaid came out.
Ah, yeah. That's a film that sort of really reinvigorated Disney.
Yep.
Began the princess craze that's still going to this day.
Or it brought back the princess craze, I should say.
I don't know. The Disney princess branding really didn't start until after.
The princess branding didn't start until like the 90s, but... Right, I mean, anyway.
No, cats don't have souls, so they won't be going to the afterlife.
I think all cats go to hell, really. And I'm saying that as someone that likes cats.
Well, 8 times out of 9, maybe.
Yeah. It's nice that he's black and white here, because he's just sort of regaining his earthly form. And it kind of comes yeah, back to color.
I also like that, it's clearly kind of like synced with his heart there. Although I wish that carried through the film a little bit more. That's such a nice touch.
It should be noted this movie is fairly short. It's like, 82 minutes? Something like that.
Not too long, but it's no longer than it needs to be.
This was also animated in Ireland.
Oh, yeah.
Which is where Bluth Studios was located at the time.
Faith and Begorra, sure and if and it was. I can say that because I'm Irish. Have a lot of that in my family.
So I'm confused a bit by this. Is he hallucinating that he's being strangled, or is it that if Charlie wouldn't have come back, Carface would have strangled him? And that's what happened to him.
No, I think it's just, it's Itchy's nervous disposition. He's having a nightmare where he, because remember, he knows that, you know, Carface went after Charlie. Itchy is logically the next target, even though, you know, Carface doesn't really have any designs on him. So Itchy, being paranoid and panicky, he just assumes Carface is after him, leading to that little mild hallucination when Charlie comes back.
So does that make me the Itchy of the sequel cast?
Maybe so. And I have returned from the dead, so I guess I'm the Charlie.
Yep.
And Jersey Jason can talk to animals, so he's the little girl, as we will see later.
Well, they make that little girl look exactly like Snow White, as far as the colors and the dress and the hair.
Oh, no, no. There are some heavy echoes of Snow
White.
Very
intentional. So, again, you see just there how Charlie held Itchy's snout, which is how people can hold a dog's snout to get them to pay attention to you.
That's a fat flea.
It's a big flea. I think the proportions are off there. And it's nice here, even though it's all junk in the junkyard, they try to make it look like a fancy bed and everything.
Well, everything is something. You can recognize the tire, you can recognize the distributor cap, you can recognize the old flashbulb camera. It's not just generic junk. Everything in this room used to be something. You can tell what that thing was. That's a
There's something about the plot of this movie and the girl in the movie that reminds me a bit of the Disney film The Rescuers.
How so?
The Rescuers, I believe, had a little girl as the main character.
Hey, there's Cherry the Chair from Pee Wee's Playhouse.
And the magic word of today is Don Bluth. Yay! Yeah.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, by the way, about the Rescuers. So.
I think tonally it's a bit similar with animals helping out a girl that's an orphan. And you got a crocodile, I think, in the Rescuers too, as well.
You got a lot
and,
of small critters, yeah.
And also everything's kind of at night. It's kind of a darker palette for everything.
Generally more darker tone to the story as well, yeah.
Yep, yeah. So this also was setting up plot in the movie. They're talking about the monster that they feed, and you'll get to see what this monster is.
Well, I will say this is one flaw that this movie does have, is there's a whole lot of setup payoff. This
immediate
whole
payoff
monster probably should have been referenced when they returned. If not when they were escaping from the pound, it should have been mentioned when they returned to the casino, rather than just mentioning it and then immediately going to the monster. know, that's something that needs some time to settle. And to kind of, like, I want to be more nervous and scared when the supposed monster shows up, but they don't give me enough time for that to happen.
I mean, certainly it looks weird with the combination of clothes.
Well, it does make one wonder, you know, because, I mean, we know that it's a little girl, but why the hell is she wearing all that?
I think she's just trying to steal as many clothes as she can by wearing them on her.
Well, maybe it's the only way she can keep warm.
Right. So, I mean, with that hair, the headband, the look in the face, that's so much Snow White.
Oh, yes, yes.
That has to be intentional. And I really dislike this character of the girl in the movie. Even though she's central to the plot, it's very cliche, and it seems like in a cartoon you have to have, more than not, a girl that's an orphan, so you feel sorry for her.
Why?
And she gets a family at the end, or a surrogate family with the dogs.
I feel sorry for her, but not because she's an orphan, but simply because of how terribly she's treated by every dog in this movie. I mean, she's just abused and exploited throughout this entire film.
She is. They do take her for a ride. And it sounds like with the voice that it might actually be a real little girl doing the voice.
Sounds like it, yeah. Which is, that's something that you always get in Don Bluth films.
Yeah.
Are very, very natural voices. You know, he won't have adults play kids. He'll just get kids. And, you know, likewise, you know, we talked about how Burt Reynolds doesn't have the best singing voice, but he still sings. That makes his character a bit more real. And that's something that I really do appreciate in these films, these more natural voices.
Right, but later on in the, you know, one of Don Bluth's bigger later projects was Anastasia. And in that, you have different actors doing the singing voices. You don't have Meg Ryan doing the musical numbers.
Well, he had less creative control over that film. That was probably a studio decision.
Could be.
I don't like the way he's looking at that kid.
He sees money when he looks at her. It shows that he's a scumbag.
Well, it looked like he wasn't thinking about money up until the dollar signs.
Looks like he wanted to hump her leg. Or maybe something else.
Her leg, if we're lucky.
Yeah. Burt Reynolds' delivery is really nice. It's just nice and relaxed. And he's always trying to pull one over on you.
Well, it's a good con man voice. It's it really speaks to something that Tom Baker once said as Doctor Who, which is, have you ever known a successful con man that didn't have an honest face? And Charlie, it looks and sounds so honest most of the time.
So what kind of a dog is Charlie? Because Itchy looks a little bit like a wiener dog, kind of.
Yeah, Itchy is a dachshund.
Yeah.
Well, Charlie, the song You Can't Keep a Good Dog Down implies that Charlie is a mutt, but he really does look like a police dog.
Mm-hmm.
I know that breed has a name. Sadly, I off the top of my head, can't remember it.
My dad got a dog that was trained as a police dog, or had partial training as a police dog, and it they got all this training to get it well-behaved, and then one day it snapped and almost... tried to attack little kids, and so they had to get rid of it.
Mm. Yeah, sometimes they can be too well trained. They
can't
exactly acclimate to domestic life, which is a real shame. They're wonderful dogs.
Yeah.
Now this, I love, again, Carface's car obsession. I love this little car simulator that he has set up.
Back projection and film projector. Do you think they ever considered casting Woody Allen in the part of this killer?
No, because Woody Allen doesn't sound insane. Charles Nelson Reilly, whenever he plays anything, sounds just a little bit deranged. He has a naturally villainous undertone to his voice.
Now, watching this, I was thinking, oh, is Burt Reynolds dead? I haven't seen him in anything for a while. But no, Burt Reynolds is alive.
We had this discussion, I believe, when Sequel Cast covered the Smokey and the Bandit films.
Yeah, Smokey and the Bandit, the trilogy, is one of the first things Sequel Cast covered. And if you want to check out all the Sequel Cast shows, including Sequel Commentary, Sequel Cast, and Sequel Cast Special, go to sequelcast.com, go to facebook.com/sequelcast. And I forgot to mention this at the top of the show, but our theme song is written and performed by Mark with a C.
I love this little gag here, him pretending to read a story to her and just making up some stuff about Robin Hood.
It's upside down, and he's reading War and Peace by Leo Tolstoy, which is like an 1,000-page book.
I like that they happen to find that book in a car in a junkyard.
Well, you know, it's a classic of literature. The way this beat-up car looks reminds me a little bit of the beat-up RV that Mel Gibson lives in the Lethal Weapon series.
Huh. Yeah, maybe so. Like the touch of the cigarette butts in the ashtray off to the side there.
Nice. And do they have a liquor cabinet? I know they had one in the casino somewhere.
I'm sure Charlie's got something for a nightcap, but I don't know. I'm not seeing any liquor out here right now. Just the phonograph.
But also because this takes place in the 30s, as we said in the beginning, they have a record player, which always adds a touch of authenticity.
Touch of class.
Now, I was a little bit too young to have records as a kid. I had the fake plastic record you'd put on the kid record player,
but
I never owned a real record. I owned cassette tapes and then CDs and then now digital purchases through iTunes and so forth. So, did you have records as a kid? Did you own a record album?
I did not specifically own any. I enjoyed records, but I was too young to really buy any. Skipped tapes, though I made a lot of mixtapes, never actually bought any tapes, and then went straight to CDs and then DVD, CDs and then now MP3s.
Right.
Although I did say my parents did have a wonderful collection of vinyl, though. I got to listen to some great stuff growing up.
So, I mean, they're basically taking this little girl hostage, having her sleep in a car in a junkyard, their makeshift home. It's not great living conditions. I think she might have been... But even where she was before, you're still in a junkyard, technically, right?
Well, no, she was in the hold of the ship, which is propped up by two planks, so it's going to go into that river any moment. It's not as if they've exactly kidnapped her; they've just transferred her kidnapping from one criminal to another. I love the positions they put Charlie in when he sleeps. Some well-observed dog positions.
Oh yeah. I have a puppy that's a toy labradoodle named Starbuck, and when she gets really sleepy, if you wake her up by accident, she looks at you and stares and does a kind of Elvis curl with her lip and looks really offended and then goes back to sleep.
This film is full of a lot of awesome details. There is one detail I wish it did have, because when Charlie, we see Charlie, winds up his watch and then comes back to life, I really feel like there should be little moments in this film in the middle of scenes where he checks his watch and winds it. But we never see him wind the watch again. I feel it would impart some sort of urgency if we saw him trying to keep that watch going.
Yeah, kind of like in Back to the Future, the first one where he has the photograph and the family members keep on disappearing.
Yeah, just
and
a good
he starts vanishing. Right.
Of what's at stake.
I mean, there isn't a lot of urgency in the storyline. In fact, All Dogs Go to Heaven doesn't have much of a storyline. But it the sort of like loosey-goosey, ramshackle, a laissez-faire tone to the thing, I think kind of fits with New Orleans as well.
Well,
and that Charlie, he's all about having a good time. He's never in a rush to do anything. And he's all about looking out for himself.
Well, I think this does have a lot of story. It just kind of gets lost from time to time. But Charlie, from the moment Charlie busts out of prison, he's got a plan. And even when he's busting out of the pound, you can tell he's still thinking. Now, I got to say, those are some dick-sucking lips on that one horse.
We call those DSLs in the biz. yeah. Jeez, look at that. Wow, you're right.
And I like that some jockey has taken the care to put a cigarette monocle in his horse, on his horse's face.
It's interesting. In the beginning of the film, when you saw the casino run by Charlie and Carface, the dogs were betting on rat races, and now they're about to set up a scam where they're going to, you know, bet on horse races, which humans watch.
Well, that's where the money is.
Yeah.
Although I do, like, I love that the clearly those two horses, the one with the lips, the one with the monocle, have a lot of character. I do wish these other two horses had that same kind of character imparted onto their design.
I think of cartoon horses, and I always think a bit of that part in Mary Poppins where the fox hunt.
Huh.
With the animation. I wish Dom DeLuise had more to do with Itchy. The character is kind of a lummox. There's not a whole lot to him. I mean, he's faithful. He's loyal. He's a good guy. But
well, that's what he does. I mean, he's when it comes down to it, he's Charlie's conscience. Charlie's not a complete character. Itchy completes him by being the more sort of sensible part of the whole dynamic.
I just think I prefer Dom DeLuise as the crow in Secret of Nim. I don't know.
I like this little bit where they can't pronounce the horse's name. It's, again, a little kind of... It's a little road movie-like.
Yeah.
I like that he's the only horse that gets a fancy banner, and they clearly want him to run away.
He's gross. So you do get horses that speak English during the race, but they don't speak very much. So I don't know if that's like that horse happens to know a little bit of dog or what.
No, that's just so that we know what they're thinking. You know, the audience can understand the animals when it suits the director, and of course the girl always understands the animals. So although that does bring up an interesting case why they don't just have the horses talk in that barn sequence. Although, actually, no, I take that back. I know why. Because if the horses did talk, you just have the girl repeating everything the horses say to Charlie. By just having them whinny, we don't have any redundant dialogue. So now that I think about it, that's actually a very good choice.
It's just to move it along, I think.
Now, I do have to wonder, what are all these people doing at the horse track? Because most of them aren't gambling.
I think they're just kind of in the park outside of the horse track. I don't know.
I was like, I mean, if you go to a horse, changes.
If you go to a horse track, do you have to bet necessarily? Can't you just go to watch the race?
You don't have to, but you know, it seems very like none of these people seem like that they're all that motivated to see the horse races. Oh, one thing I do want to say: notice that this man is not wearing any glasses.
Nope.
Oh, yeah, an old Band-Aid.
Ugh.
But you just take note that he's not wearing any glasses. And I'll say more on that later.
So they stole his wallet, which will become a point later in the film. They're all scamming. She's doing the cute act to get free shit from people.
Even though she's homeless.
And
she's just being a little girl, they're just using her as a distraction.
That's another one of your spiral transitions. So this bit where people try to look like a person and they're all stacked with each other is cute, but it's been in so many other things. It's such an old, tired bit.
Well, the twist that they put on this is that their constant shuffling in that suit makes it look like they're dancing and they keep having that somber beat going on, which is kind of cute. Although this is back in the days when you didn't need to prove anything, to like prove your legal age to gamble.
No.
Now we can't tell how many dollars, you know, are is in that bankroll. But you know, no, judging by the odds, when the Chahi wins, they're gonna whatever they put in, they're gonna get back 1,000 times that.
Exactly. So if they put in odds. $10, they'd get $10,000.
Yep.
Jeez.
That's how odds work.
Yeah.
When you're talking about gambling.
You know, when I was in Las Vegas, we played an arcade game that was gambling, where you bet money on video game horses that were racing.
Huh.
It was pretty fun. I mean, it was much faster than a horse race, but...
So a friend of mine, Nathan Yon, works for a company that makes slot machines and such.
Oh, okay. You know, so, all the slot machines... All
I've
the
heard,
new slot
I've heard some interesting stories about slot machines.
Yeah. I was going to say, all the new slot machines that are big are all based on movies. There's one based on Airplane. The Hangover is a pretty big one. There's a Ghostbusters one. There's a Star Wars one. Alien is an older one that's pretty good. So, yeah, there's one based on the board game Clue. They have like mini games that make them a bit more like video games at time, with the touch screen interfaces.
I guess, you know, I bet if you were an app designer, you could probably make a lot of money doing apps that simulated those slot machines.
Oh, and I'm sure there's apps like that out there, too.
Oh, true. And I like this. I like that the horses all have a gentleman's agreement to let the birthday boy win.
Yeah.
I guess that happens with all horses. If it's your birthday. So, folks, it never fails. If you want to gamble on horse races, always bet on the horse who has a birthday that day. Well, that being said, I have no idea how you find out when a horse was born, besides talking to it. Missy!
That horse looks like it's going to die any second.
It might, actually.
Yeah.
That's another little touch. I like that Charlie doesn't like being kissed and has that kind of dog reaction. And here's the Jumping Frog of Calaveras County.
A reference to the Mark Twain story.
Yeah, that thing with the bucket of flies always freaks me out. Just like all those things buzzing and vibrating around you and just eating them. I guess I can understand where a cartoon frog likes that situation, but I don't want to be in that situation. And this super fast turtle gag is recycled in the Swan Princess.
That was also directed by Don Bluth?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, I think you're right.
With Jack Palance as the villain. It's either Jack Palance or Charlton Heston. It's one of those two. Probably Jack Palance. Now, I use a question. Why do dogs need money? They were fine with bones and meat.
Because Charlie wants to open up his own casino to compete with the casino he founded with Carface.
So what, he's going to go to a broker and buy property and then labor to build a casino?
Yep, because he's all about himself having the swankiest place around. He does get the girl clothes, but he doesn't get her a family.
No, you don't understand. Who does he have to, in this whole process, who does he have to pay money to?
I guess the dog bank?
But they take bones and meat.
He uses the money to buy bones and meat, which then he gives to the dog bank.
That I will accept.
Okay, see?
But I love this industriousness here in the junkyard.
The music is quite industrious, too.
Yeah, and Itchy does all the work, so like it's all going to go to Itchy. And that's got to piss off Carface that the whole place has a big car motif.
Exactly. It looks like the roof of the Griswolds during Christmas.
Yeah. And there's the showgirls there.
The poodles. Wow. Mm-hmm. Hey, there you go. There's the drinks.
I'm not sure what the touch of the Uncle Sam hat there, but it is a nice splash of color.
Yep. Although the movie overall is very colorful, there's something drab to the look, and I'm just not sure if it's the age of the film print.
No, even when it was released, it looked like this. So that's, I think, all part of the Don Bluth style, using darker tones and trying to do more with light and contrast.
Right, well, I mean, it's
I
still...
I gotta say, how many times have you been through this with a dame?
Right.
Oh my god, that's the dirtiest sign. There was a sign for the dancing girls. It was all breeds review.
Ooh.
Which I guess is like as close to interracial as dogs get.
Yep.
And there's some New Orleans piranhas. This is also a real grim scene, just sending Killer down to his death in the piranha bag.
But it makes sense. He's upset at Killer. Killer, you know, did the job successfully with Scarface right there, but somehow Charlie got back to Earth, and they don't know how that happened.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know,
so he's being killed as an example.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Scarface has to save face, and to do that by brutalizing your second in command.
Right. The part of Scarface is played by a character actor. I can't recall his name. Let me look it up. The part of Scarface in this film is played by Vic Tayback, who's a character actor. However, in the sequels, it's played by Ernest Borgnine.
Another good actor. Love the animation on those chains.
This conceit in the movie doesn't make a whole lot of sense, and it almost seems like a reference to this Ray Gun and Space Ace, the video game that Don Bluth did.
No, I don't think that's what it is. I think that in the original... I think this scene was probably changed before the film's release for probably pretty obvious reasons. I think what he meant... I think what he said was... I've got a gun. And, like, he literally means he's got a gun. Which, you know, I guess, you know, dogs can get everything else in this movie. Why not firearms? And I think that thing where he explains that it's a Buck Rogers gun was something that was added later. When we get to the scene when they actually use the gun, I'll point out some things that I can back my stance. But I think it's supposed to be an actual firearm. Although that'll raise a question. What fan club is giving away actual laser guns?
They might have just engineered one himself. So, given dogs pizza, I mean, dogs can eat pizza. Bread isn't great for dogs, but he's not giving dogs chocolate, you know, something that would kill them.
Well, this is another thing, though. I really wish this church had been set up more in the beginning. I believe up until this point, there's only been one reference to the church. And admittedly, it did come kind of early in the film. But for a place that's so important to Charlie that he clearly has a lot of connections with... to the point where maybe this is where he stayed as a pup, I would care much more about what's going on in this scene if some pipe had been laid connecting to this church much earlier.
So these aren't Charlie's kids, it's just kind of like an orphanage?
Well, we presume that they're not his kids. But,
yeah, they never say, I guess, one way or the other. But from the way he's looking at that Lassie dog.
Oh, the Collie?
Collie, that's your go.
Yeah, he's got the need to breed.
Yep.
Oh, that's the other thing. Like watching this scene. Wow, I want all these dogs to get into a good home, but if they get into a good home, they're going to be neutered. That's got to be weird if you're a cartoon dog.
I think so, but they're not animating the dog's genitals flapping around.
Not yet.
Now, if Ralph Bakshi did All Dogs Go to Heaven, you'd see some dog penis waving around.
Hot dog.
This melody's okay. I think this is the other song that I think... I wouldn't say any of these are a favorite, but...
Well, this song seems really thrown together. This song feels like it's like before the film's release, wow, we're 5 minutes too short. Let's whip in a musical number. And they just threw this together.
Sounds a bit like a Deo by Harry Belafonte.
Well, they're clearly trying to go for an island rhythm, but like this feels like the first draft of a song. I love how sensuously this pizza is animated.
Yeah.
And Bert ironically, he's trying.
Yeah, no, he's trying more at the singing on this. But ironically, the message he's saying, the more you give, the more you're going to get, is something Charlie really doesn't do. He's all about taking, 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 and keeping.
Well, these are dogs. These are, you know, this is his own group. Humans, as far as he's concerned, can go fuck themselves.
Right. The more you share, the more the sun will shine. See, I can sing better than Burt Reynolds. Not much better, but...
Little Busby Berkeley there.
Yeah, exactly. That's kind of cute.
This is some weird colors on those dogs. I think some
Isn't
of them
it
might
green
be
and blue? And
either
one
that,
of them might be dying.
Like, they were dyed novelty pets from Mardi Gras that were abandoned. And they immediately forget the lesson that they just learned.
For my dog's birthday, we got her a little tiny cupcake. And she ate all the icing and then didn't know what to do with the cupcake and just started rolling it around.
Now, I don't know if you noticed that wedding photo. The bride looks so disappointed.
Yep. Well, did you see what the guy looks like? He looks like Poindexter.
Yes, he's wearing glasses.
Yep,
now,
that's what I mean.
Now, we didn't see him
Poindexter.
Wearing glasses in the race, at the racetrack.
No.
But that's the thing. He wears glasses in all the remaining scenes in this film.
He doesn't like to wear them in public. He's shy. He wants to come off as more macho, I guess. I don't know.
He wore them at the wedding.
He wore them at the wedding, but, you know, again, a wedding, even though it's a public event, it's also personal. Well, semi-public. It's not totally private.
Well, the British tabloids were there.
Right.
And see, that's another reason I think that song about sharing was added at the last minute.
This song right here, all I have right is a picture here. In my mind, is a piece of shit. It's a rip. Not only is it a ripoff of a song from an earlier Don Bluth scene, American Tale, Somewhere Out There. It's very similar in far as what it's trying to communicate. And in the end credits, there's a hilarious take on this song done by like a Peebo Bryson ripoff type.
Well, it's probably a temp track.
Yeah.
Well, they didn't take all the money.
I'm going to invade these rich people's lives and make them raise me.
Even in her fantasies, he wears glasses.
Yeah.
Even though she's only met him once. Oh, and this photo was taken right before they died in her fantasy. And that's right before they all ran out into the road and were hit by that truck. And that dog is on a gigantic erection.
Yep.
Norman Rockwell.
Why do you think he's smiling?
Why does she imagine all photos at Dutch angles?
And why do all the photos have the dogs in there, too? Isn't it up to what, a family? You're that greedy? You want 20 fucking puppies? You know how much work that is?
Well, no. She cares about the dogs. She wants them to have a good family, too.
You know what it's like to clean a metric ton of dog shit and piss?
Oh, I do.
That's all puppies do.
I helped renovate an almost condemned house. I do know exactly what you're talking about.
That's a nice smell, isn't it?
Oh, well. I will say this, to our credit, we took care of that in a day.
Wow.
Yep. The cleaning power of bleach.
I mean, do you agree that song is a little bit like Somewhere Out There from an American Tale?
It has some parallels, but it's like any song about longing, you know?
I just think Somewhere Out There is a much better melody.
Now, I wonder if Charlie's been having nightmares every night, or if this is just the only one that we're privy to.
This is the most terrifying sequence in the film, in which he dreams he goes to doggy hell, even though all dogs go to heaven.
Well, no, he violated the natural order by winding his own watch.
You're right,
because
he can never go back. He has to go to hell.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
That breaks the covenant.
It's a bit reminiscent of parts of Fantasia, I think, with the imagery.
There are some echoes of Night on Bald Mountain. Yeah. Although I think that's an intentional reference on the animator's part. I'll say, you don't normally see wind dragging people into hell. And there's Charon, Riverman of the Dead.
He's not as scary as the doggy devil. That thing is...
Well, I mean, you think... think about it. Whatever the devil does, you have to be even worse to be the dog devil.
Right.
Has a little flash of Scarface, Carface, before he takes on this form.
The doggy devil pissed on God's shoes.
Now, I like... Oh, there's the monkey rats.
Oh, jeez.
Monkey rat bat.
Yeah.
Ripped
to pieces.
This is one thing. I got to give this. I don't endorse violence against animals. I think that's against animals. I think that's a travesty, but... I gotta say, I got to applaud them for being willing to put the animated dogs through some real nasty brutality.
Right. Now, there's not blood, I don't believe, in this
film.
Oh,
not yet.
You get some later, but it's not gushing or anything. It's not like an anime.
If only. Nails. He's pretty agile when he's asleep to be balanced on that broom when he wakes up. I've woken up in some weird places before, but I've never woken up balanced on top of a broom. Now, have you checked to see what's actually on 402 Maple Street in New Orleans?
You know, I'll look that up in the Computertron right now.
Yeah. Go to Google Maps and then Bing that on Google Maps.
There is a 402 Maple Street in St. Lake Charles, Louisiana. Let me look this up.
There a house like this there?
452 Maple Street. Mm-hmm.
That is a darling nightgown.
There's a 452 Maple Street in Harvey, Louisiana, which is around New Orleans.
Is there a house like this there?
There's not, but there's a place called New Orleans Realtors. So.
Well, obviously this animated house was torn down before the world became all three-dimensional and modern.
I think so, too.
People are so hooked on progress.
I've only had the opportunity to go to New Orleans once, and I got to go there before Hurricane Katrina. I went in 2001, and it was really interesting. I wish I would have had money when I was there, because we just literally slept in a car in a parking garage, which is a poor decision in New Orleans. No, I take that back. We slept in a two-story Crystal's fast food restaurant in New Orleans and woke up surrounded by bums.
Are you sure you weren't one of them?
We basically were, the way we're trying to save money on the vacation.
Yeah, I went to the first post-Katrina Mardi Gras. I had a fantastic time.
I've never been to Mardi Gras. I'm sure it's great.
You got to do it at least once.
I want
to go to Carnival in Brazil sometime, too.
Right.
I need to cover my body in sequins and dance the samba!
So she mentioned it was the Wallet family. Is the name, last name of the family literally Wallet? Or she just means the family whose wallet
the family
they have?
The Wallet. I mean, I mean,
okay.
Then again, maybe, because we never see them working, maybe one of them is descended from the inventor of the wallet, and they get a wallet royalty.
There's a sign there that says Bluth's Bakery, a reference to director Don Bluth.
Yeah, they're descendants of R.K. Phineas Wallet. Okay,
right. Okay, you're right. It looks like a machine gun.
No, that is a machine gun.
Yeah.
But they add an after effect. And look, it's shooting actual red-hot bullets. They've just changed the sound effect.
Yeah.
Now, I like the watch not only brings him back to life when it's wound up, it makes him immortal. Unless, of course, this really is a toy ray gun that the dogs just think is real, so that's why it doesn't kill him. But no, I mean, look at that. That is an actual Tommy gun on a
I
tripod.
I think you're right. Now, if you took this scene and redubbed machine gun sound effects over it.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
That'd
be tough to lay into the audio mix and not have it be shitty. But
no, I mean, I think that scene was originally animated with that being an actual firearm.
Good catch.
And
I think
you're
right.
Freaked out people in test audiences, so they changed it.
This is a great look with the fire hydrant as a hat with the beads
like her,
on it.
Her Robin Hood hat.
Yes.
This is where the movie takes a very interesting detour. No, I like those skulls. Oh, no, those aren't skulls. That's the ruffles. Never mind.
And there's another fire hydrant.
Oh, no, that's the one that fell down with
him. Oh, I'm sorry. That's the hat. Okay. I told my wife I had never seen this movie before watching it yesterday, and she was very shocked.
Hmm. How many times had she seen it?
A bunch as a kid. She didn't get to watch it with me because she works four 10-hour shifts now.
Oh, wow.
So I get home from work like at 3:30, and then she gets home from work at 9 o'clock at night. And I start work at 6 in the morning, so a lot of catching up on the weekends.
Now, New Orleans isn't known for its Polynesian rats, but here we are.
Voodoo rats, I think, would have been more appropriate.
I like the detail on those cages. That the rats had time to put them in, and they were completely unresisting, apparently.
And this is the scene you were warning me about with the crocodile. It's so... Alligator, okay. It's so bizarre.
This scene... One of the contributors to NostalgiaCritic.com reviewed this movie and was so struck by this scene that she created a graphic called Big Lipped Alex Singing Alligator Moment. And whenever she now reviews a movie where there's a scene that just comes out of nowhere, she throws up that graphic on the review, and now there's a page on TV Tropes dedicated to that. And there's another bit of weirdness, because the alligator, the look that the alligator gets as it sings becomes more and more feminine, to the point where, like, I'm wondering... This had to originally have been written as a woman or something, and then they just stuck with the man from a temp track, maybe.
I don't know. It could. I mean, definitely a surprise. I don't know if the alligator is gay, if it's transgendered, if it's just a fan of Burt Reynolds' voice.
Yeah, although I do like that Charlie's howl pays off like this.
Yeah,
but no, like, look, he's got eyeliner, the eyelashes, this, like...
And the way the clam is pulsating is very sexual.
I guess, is this a gay alligator, or is it a woman that they then recorded it with a man's voice? This scene raises lots of questions.
I would have liked to see the crocodile in a spinoff cartoon. Get his own series.
That's an alligator.
Oh, whatever, alligator.
There's a difference. I will say this, though. I like this song. It's very, very catchy. I like the silly bits. I just wish that when he went underwater, we didn't get that distortion on his voice. I mean, I know it makes sense the distortion is there, but I really want to hear these words unmuffled. And I like that music makes them instant friends. That's a nice bit.
And that he has trapeze equipment in the sewer.
He's a showman. When he's not eating whoever the rat sacrificed to him, he likes putting on shows.
When I saw this for the first time yesterday, my jaw dropped to the floor. I could not believe what I was seeing. And I was really hoping that the alligator would team up with Charlie for the rest of the film. But that's not exactly what happens.
And like that headdress, this just... So much happening here.
I think the music and the animation in this sequence is some of the higher production value stuff.
And I like that this musical number never really ends. The gator just keeps on going.
Yeah. Now, if someone sang this at karaoke, that would be pretty amazing.
I'd do it.
Now, I don't think they'd have it.
Yeah. Bar that specializes
in Don Bluth numbers.
Actually, went to when I visited Savannah, Georgia a year ago. Jersey Jason, now Georgia Jason, was down there. He took me to a bar that did karaoke. I sang the Oscar the Grouch "I Love Trash" song. They actually had a bunch of Sesame Street songs on rotation.
Oh yeah,
it was awesome. Then we did a duet of the theme from Smokey and the Bandit.
Oh, that's great. Eastbound and Down.
Yeah. And a party of five people came in as we were singing that song, turned around and walked right back after taking one look at the stage. I love those feelings of power.
So it's a shame that Itchy is kind of separated from Charlie for a big part of this picture.
Yeah.
Because you get that nice chemistry with him in the beginning.
Well, he's handling the business end of things. Although this is like for Charlie wanting to stay under Carface's radar, he really shouldn't have built a giant casino with his name on it.
Nope. He could have called it not Charlie's
Silent Partners. That's a nice, creepy old church.
It is a nice, creepy zoom in with the dead trees in the foreground.
And this scene is hard for me to watch just because of the way Itchy's been worked over. And then just because of Charlie's just complete bastard behavior.
Yep. Do you think Itchy's drunk or he's just very
sick? No, he's been brutalized.
Yeah.
I mean, getting Carface and his goons completely worked Itchy over. I mean, look, he's got abrasions, a black eye.
Yeah.
I mean, they did some terrible things to him. The city of New Orleans cares not for garbage fires.
I guess not. When I grew up in Georgia, people would pile tons of leaves and set them on fire right in their backyard.
You know, look at that. I've got to, at some point, there's probably going to be an arson investigation at the junkyard, and the investigator's going to be, we're looking at all the evidence. We think a casino built by dogs was set on fire by other dogs. That's what all the signs point to.
It's all that dog-on-dog violence.
I do like that they keep those shines on Charlie's watch throughout the film.
You do feel bad for Itchy, and Itchy kind of wants it how things used to be, I think. He thinks
Only Dom DeLuise gets a real chance to act in this scene.
He does. And the animation on Itchy's face is great, too. Not just the injuries, but the way the eyes, it shakes his head, the tears welling up.
Yeah.
And there in the background is the girl listening.
This is real. I mean, I know he's been exploiting the girl the whole film, but just to see him being this blunt and brutal about it, it's really uncomfortable. I mean, by this point in the film, you kind of lose all sympathy for Charlie.
Her eyes look really weird there. She looks like some kind of monster.
Well, all little girls are monsters, Matt. That is why you must slay them. With kindness.
So Carface is just getting the girl to get to Charlie and Itchy.
Carface is getting the girl because that's his ticket to always winning the rat races.
Yep. Oh,
and
that too.
Course,
I didn't even think about that.
Charlie
right.
is just a bonus.
Yep. It's icing on the cake.
Love these New Orleans street renderings.
Woof, woof, woof.
No, I like that there's no explanation for that Australian dog wearing a crown.
This whole bit with the dogs barking and talking to each other, I think, might be an homage to Lady and the Tramp.
Oh, yeah, the barking chain.
Or the barking. And also in Lady and the Tramp, different dogs had different dialects. You had an Irish dog, you had a... all this other stuff. Exactly, this right here.
It's all the cartoon laws of accents. All animals that can speak English, but they speak a different accent depending on what their breed is.
Now, pound puppies came out before All Dogs Go to Heaven, right?
Probably. That was an earlier 80s marketing gimmick. I guess this is where he and Carface used to keep everything they wanted in cages, which is why he knew how to get there as quickly as possible. Look at that. Sometimes he's a quadruped, sometimes he's a biped, depending on what the scene needs.
That's standard cartoon logic. Now, is that an anachronistic joke about Lassie? Since this takes place in the 30s, was Lassie around then?
No, no. Lassie was a dog movie star.
In the 30s?
There were lots of Lassie films. I don't know for sure if they go all the way back to the 30s, but they go back far enough that I'm gonna forgive it if the reference is wrong. And again, glasses. Oh yeah, show us some leg.
I was doing some research on director Don Bluth to see what he's doing now, and he's been working on a new Dragon's Lair comic. And they made a version of it that's an app that's, I think, somewhat interactive for iPhone.
They revived it again.
For the comic book, and they also made a port of the video of the Dragon's Lair game on the Xbox.
Yeah. So, here comes a gator.
Now, look at that gator butt.
I wish the gator had been laid in earlier, because I like that the gator now comes whenever he hears that howling note, which is a real nice touch. But I wish it wasn't something that was just set up and just paid off.
I think you could have done this movie without the girl somehow. I really don't like how it's not much of a character as it is a plot device.
Another thing I like that we see Charlie drinking, we never see Charlie smoking. We just see him with the candy canes.
But Carface, you see smoking cigars all the time.
Oh, yeah.
And in fact, Carface is the lead character of the All Dogs Go to Heaven Christmas movie.
Huh. Think we're going to do a commentary for that one?
Oh, I don't know.
It's like the gator has put away its bathing cap and is now wearing a marching band conductor's hat.
It's time for business. So anything that runs and gallops or so forth on all fours is really challenging to animate.
Oh, yeah.
Especially in here, you get groups of dogs.
Yeah, that's kind of why you got to go back to those films of the horse galloping. It's a classic reference. It's still used in animation today.
Edward Muybridge, I believe.
I think so. It teaches you more about how quadrupeds move.
They also feature some of those photographs in the sequence of the Wachowskis movie Speed Racer.
Huh.
Did you see Speed Racer?
No, I didn't.
I think you'd...
I'm done with nostalgia, so I didn't see it when it came out.
You know, I think you'd like it. They made a film deliberately for really little children, but it's also like really colorful and does some clever things with the effects.
Did it ever occur to Charlie to just keep the watch in a safe place?
Like up his butt? Like up his ass? Like in Pulp Fiction?
I wore this watch after I escaped from heaven. Well, I was thinking in like a locked box or something like that, or a bank since they have money. But, well, then again, I guess this is post-Depression era, so maybe the banks aren't the safest place to keep your life watch.
Now, did you ever see the All Dogs Go to Heaven TV show?
No, no.
Me neither. I was just wondering what it was about.
I assume it's about Angel Charlie teaching people lessons, but I don't know.
Oh, dear. Touched by an angel with doggies.
That, I think, would be... I might even watch that.
Okay. But, he's saving the girl, but even this, there is nothing really at stake in this scene, except this, he has to choose between the girl or the watch.
Well, just because he doesn't think about gripping the watch in his teeth. If he just gripped the watch band in his teeth, no problem.
If he had it up his ass to begin with, no problem.
What is it with you and dogs' asses tonight?
Well, dogs like to sniff each other's asses, and it'd be a safe place for a watch. But that's what Christopher Walken told me.
So sometimes the watch works underwater, sometimes it doesn't.
And then so he has time to get the watch to sort it. Well, no, I guess I should shut up. That's not entirely true. So this is finally some momentum in the picture, but it's at the end of the film. I think it could have used a bit more action throughout.
It could have used...
Yeah, gator, more of the gator, certainly. And you could have used less song and dance numbers, I think. But they keep all the songs pretty short.
Yeah, well, just, you know, cut the sharing song, complete the alligator song, and I think you got some good mix of music in there. Although I can't help but feeling there should be a musical number. Now, where did he get a modern tracksuit? I can't help but feeling that there should be, like, a musical number. It's a dog's life, where it's just a bunch of, like, dogs down on their luck in the pound or something like that. Although this does follow the Robert McKee, you know, inciting incident as quickly as possible. Film opens mid-jailbreak.
Yeah, I was looking. There's a website called fanedit.org where fans make their own cuts of a movie, and then you can watch them on there. It's, anyway, but I was looking to see if they had a really dark-toned, serious cut of All Dogs Go to Heaven.
Ah, the devil comes to collect his due.
But they do not. So did Charlie die there in the ocean? I wasn't paying attention.
Well, yeah, the watch
Yeah, he did.
Stopped
so the
running,
watch stopped.
So he's
okay.
Dead again.
And there, but he's a ghost. Dead Again, that's a movie with the Kenneth Branagh killing people with scissors.
Although he looks pretty solid for a ghost. I kind of feel like he should be like transparent or flickering or glowing or something.
He's kind of slowly fading. Only now does he get his redemption when he chooses to save the human over saving himself by getting the watch.
Well, he's allowed to have a selfless act.
He's an asshole the entire time until the last 2 seconds. And that's how we can get back into heaven.
Well, yeah. But
meanwhile,
hey,
you get
anybody,
these like floating save points from Final Fantasy VI.
I can give coming you magic
to wipe out the devil dog.
He has no power here because Charlie died virtuously, so he can't go to hell.
I hear this Charlie, and I think of the Charlie the Unicorn video on YouTube.
I was just thinking of Glenda the Good Witch. Here comes someone who can help you.
Well, that too, sure. That's nice. You get the little cock in the one ear. That's a very dog thing.
I wonder if it's easier to travel by light bubble than in your natural form.
But he had wings before. Can he just sprout wings, or does he not?
No, they were stuck on him by the woodland critters, and he tore them off.
Ah, okay. Gotcha.
I hope she grows up to be decent.
I think she grows up to be Lindsay Lohan.
No. Lindsay Lohan is 80 plus years old.
Yep.
This is 1939 after all.
She's an old soul. In a young body.
I don't know. She's got that talking to animals thing. So she could become a really awesome vet.
She goes on to star in Dr. Doolittle 3 and 4 with Dr. Doolittle's daughter.
They did two of those?
Yeah.
Well, let's not do that series.
No, that'd be a poor idea.
That is a nice bed. That is the fanciest guest room I have ever seen.
What do you think about dogs sleeping in beds?
Typically, I don't mind it. I actually prefer... This might be tainted by my current experience, but generally, I prefer dogs sleeping in a bed to cats sleeping in a bed, only because we've got two cats, Mr. Graves and Shinobi. Mr. Graves doesn't like the bed, so he stays off of it. Shinobi is just a complete dick if he's in bed with you.
He'll try to
nurse off of you. He'll try to ram into you to get you to wake up to pet him. We don't let him in the bedroom anymore.
I like cats more than dogs, and I'm okay with cats in bed, but I'm not okay with dogs in bed. But sometimes we've had to when we've traveled. And Starbuck just likes to jump up and down on the bed like as a trampoline.
I say the past experience I've had with dogs is that they understand the bed's meant for sleeping. So they get on the bed and they just sleep.
Hmm. So there's some business going on in these end credits. And, of course, in sequel commentary, we talk through the entire film, including all of the end credits, which run for 6 minutes.
I like that bit. You know, I know we're dead up here, but so is the music. And they kick it up. Although I do wish this song was a little bit more gospel choir-y.
Yeah.
So this is what I got to wonder. Are dogs constantly escaping from heaven? Because it looks real easy.
Right. Was that supposed to be set up for a sequel? You think, or just...
I honestly don't know.
There's just a cute button on the end.
Because Don Bluth doesn't really typically work with franchises. I can't imagine they expected it. I guess it was just, you know, it's just the business. You know, it's been established that dogs can come back. Clearly, Carface is going to try to bust out. Although this is kind of fucked up that a dog that commits cold-blooded murder gets to go to heaven.
It is.
Also, was that like 10 story credits?
That's not uncommon in animation, especially back then. I mean, they often credit, you know, the storyboarders for story credit and things. You got a bunch of guys in a room pitching around ideas.
Yeah. It's always like whenever I see more than three screenwriters on a movie, I get very, very nervous.
So now we're about to hear the radio arrangement of the song "The Girl Was Singing at the Window."
No, this is...
Is it not that song? I thought it was.
Love Will Outlive Us, I think it is. The love theme from this movie. Never shows up in the movie, just shows up in the credits.
Oh, I guess I'm mistaken. I didn't realize that. Okay. But the love song of who? Between Charlie and the girl?
I honestly don't know.
Is it between the two dogs in heaven, Charlie and the pink floaty thing?
I honestly don't know. I think that it must have just been commissioned out of hand, figuring that they would have a big love song, that it just never happened, but they still had the temp track, so they used it. And this way, they have this kind of song to submit for the Oscar.
I think this song had a bigger budget than the rest of the songs in this picture.
Actually, if I don't know if you, that's a little bit of fun trivia. You notice how whenever a musical gets made, like a Broadway musical gets made into a movie, there's always, and featuring a new song, there's always at least one new song. That's so they can submit it to the Oscar for Best Original Song.
Hmm.
That's the only reason that happens. And like with the, and sometimes they'll make those new songs and they still won't actually be in the movie, but they'll be on the end credits or on the soundtrack, so still technically they can submit it to the Oscars.
They did that with the Phantom of the Opera movie.
And the producers.
Yeah.
It was like a song about like the modern theater. Which I guess it gives you something to do with those drafts of songs you cut from the musical. So this is a weird... Oh, Lonnie Anderson. This is... I don't know, this is a weird heaven. There's no people in
love
it. There doesn't seem to be anything to do.
Beyond our lives. I feel those times growing stronger. There you go.
Candy Divine. That is a drag queen name.
The locals are done by one. The vocals for this are done by Freddie Jackson and Irene Cara. So it talks about some computer animation is in the credits, and I'm trying to think what for.
It would have been used on the car running over Charlie scene.
Yeah.
It was used on the electromagnetic crane. It was used on the anchor. Any kind of object that appeared to move more or less three-dimensionally with great accuracy was probably assisted with computer animation.
Yeah, I guess at the time that was pretty common, you know, like... Disney's
not too common. I think the first time it was ever really used, at least in a big way, was in The Great Mouse Detective.
Right, and then after that, Disney's Black Cauldron cartoon, the cauldron itself was CG.
That's a fun, if not that entertaining, movie. We ought to do a commentary for that after we're done with the All Dogs Go to Heaven series.
Yeah, I mean, those books are actually pretty... good, and they tried to jam
Chronicles.
Two or three books. Yeah, and they tried to jam two or three of them together in the Black Cauldron movie.
I don't know.
And I'm a bit surprised.
Managed...
Oh, go on.
I don't know anyone who's managed to read past the first few chapters in the first book.
I have. I read all five several times.
Cool.
There's even one of those Prydain Chronicles books called Terran Wanderer, that is a. Basically an adaptation of the story of Buddha.
Huh.
So now you get swanky jazz music on the credits.
I wish there had been it's a jazz rendition of Can't Keep a Good Dog Down. I wish there was a little bit more jazz in this movie. A little bit more.
Yeah, it could have used it. In the Disney cartoon that takes place in New Orleans, the Frog Princess, that has a good bit of jazz in its score by Randy Newman.
And this opens with a song by Dr. John, which you have to have. Maybe that's one of the things that held this movie back. It takes place in New Orleans and doesn't have a Dr. John song.
No voodoo at all, really, huh? Copyright 1989.
And well, this has been Sequel Commentary.
For All Dogs Go to Heaven, check us out, sequelcast.com, facebook.com/sequelcast. For a Sequel Commentary, I'm Matt.
And this is Thrasher.
Saying,
you can't keep a good dog down.
You can't keep a good dog down.
Whoa, 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 whoa.
I always love the MGM lion.
Oh, it gives me chills every time I see it come up.
The one movie logo I really like is Warner Brothers in the 80s had an ugly logo that was a fat W and a fat B.
That animated one they sometimes used?
Yeah.
Should we stop recording?
We should.